la cara. Cuéntanos en un vídeo por qué te gusta Vaughan y gana un Daytown por la cara. Grábate un vídeo contándonos por qué estás in love with Vaughan, enamorado de Vaughan. Súbelo a Twitter con el hashtag LoveVaughan, lo ve Vaughan, mencionando a @grupoVaughan. Anunciaremos el ganador el día 17 de abril. ¡Good luck!
¿Y tú qué has hecho en los tres últimos meses? Si no has hecho nada por tu inglés, ahora es el momento. Apúntate a nuestros cursos trimestrales 100% método Vaughan, clases 100% orales en grupos reducidos. La matrícula ya está abierta para todos los niveles, así que no pierdas ni un segundo más e infórmate ahora en el 91-133-5833 o en grupovaughan.com. Los cursos trimestrales te ofrecen este programa.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host. My name is Guy Williams. Yesterday, on yesterday's program, you could tell from my voice, tell, distinguir, averiguar, notar, to tell. You think that tell is contar, but tell is also distinguir. For example, I don't know, ¿en qué lo notas? How can you tell? This tell always with can. I can't tell the difference. They are identical. I can't tell the difference between the two. No los distingo. All right. Now, you could tell from my voice yesterday that I was un poco ronco, right? I was a little hoarse. And I haven't entirely recovered, but, well, just... have a little patience, and maybe tomorrow my voice will be better. In any case, yes, you can tell that I'm still a little... Well, I'm not ill, but I have something in my lungs, something in my throat. In any case, on tonight's program, we will be talking about the times, the golden age of the caliphate of Córdoba, that golden age, like every golden age, ephemeral, doomed, right? Predestinado al fracaso, doomed, practically before it began. Looking back with all this nostalgia at the glory of Córdoba under the caliphate, and the quality of people that Abderrahman knew how to surround himself with. So yes, Abderrahman III, the caliph. And one of the people, I spoke about one of the people on an earlier program, I'll be speaking about him again today, Resimund, the local bishop. Well, actually made Bishop of Elvira. Remember that Elvira was, later it was going to be Granada, but at this time still called Elvira. He was given that obispado, he was given that bishopric as a present for his diplomatic activity. But of course there was nobody better qualified than Resimund. And a brilliant man, and a great diplomat. Another great diplomat, this time Jewish, from Jaén. His father, Isaac ibn Ezra, the owner of a hammam, right? The owner of a bath, one of those public baths. The Muslims had continued the habit, the custom, the Roman custom of the thermae, of the public baths, this time called Hammam. And you can see, by the way, you can see that in place names all over Spain, where you have Alhama, those are usually thermal waters, natural thermal manantiales, springs. Alhama de Aragón, Alhamilla, Alhama de Granada, places like that. These are where there were baths, spas, if you want to call them that. And they were ubiquitous. They were everywhere. They were part of public life. The local hammam. Well, there were something like four hammams in Jaén at this time, and one of them was called Isaac's hammam. And Isaac ibn Ezra, the father of Hasdai. Now, Hasdai must have been very brilliant, almost from the beginning. From a very, very early age, of course, he spoke Hebrew. Naturally, he spoke Arabic fluently. Also, the local Romance language. Not, of course, like anything like Spanish, but the language of the Mozarabs. And naturally, he studied Latin and became very, very good at the Latin language. And this, of course, gave him all kinds of advantages that other people didn't have. These are the languages we know about, but just like today, language, the mastery of different languages is the key to success. And he was able to do this at a very early age. Now, he loved medicine, studied to be a doctor, was an accomplished doctor, and loved science, loved experimentation, knew all about the plants and the medicinal substances and so forth. And they say that he reinvented or rediscovered the recipe for triaca. Triaca had been, or theriaca, had been, in Roman times, the antidote for all kinds of poison. Theriaca had been a kind of cure-all, a panacea, that people took, a lot. The recipe for theriaca was lost, and evidently, he either rediscovered it or simply invented something on his own. But he was famous and recognized for this. Remember that at this time, thanks to the what is called the Pax Arabica, the fact that commerce was possible all the way from the Spice Islands in the South Pacific, all the way through the Indian Ocean, all the way to the Iberian Peninsula. And yes, you have international commerce on a large scale in all of these areas. And thanks to that, many, many things had arrived on the shores of the Iberian Peninsula. Lemons and limes and oranges, citrus fruits of all kinds. And sugarcane, which at that time was considered a medicinal substance. And it is quite possible that this new theriaca, he called it Triaca de Al-Farouk. I imagine the Arabic name for it was Al-Farouk. Triaca de Al-Farouk probably contained a large amount of sugar. Again, considered therapeutic at that time, considered medicine at that time. Although, well, in the future, there's going to be more and more of it. It's you know, very, very difficult to get that much sugar, but when you have it, in the future, for example, under the Taifa kings, one of the pastimes would be to have ladies from the harem pretending, right, fingiendo, pretending to make bricks and pretending to make things out of clay, right, arcilla. But instead of clay, you would have a mixture of very, very precious sugar and cinnamon, canela, all of these things as a kind of a, as a way to laugh at the common people and as a way to, as a way to enjoy themselves, I suppose. In any case, yes, playing at making things as if this were arcilla, as if this were lots and lots of clay. So yes, sugar became more abundant later. Now, this triaca, by the way, that word evolves into English as treacle. In British English, treacle is the azúcar, well, miel de caña, right? It's the it's kind of a semi-processed sugar syrup, and treacle is used in dessert to this day in England. And the word treacle is, it has evolved, it is derived from this word triaca. Well, Hasdai ibn Shaprut invented it. And so, somebody so meritorious, somebody so interesting, naturally attracted the attention of Abdurrahman. It brought the man to court and almost immediately made him his personal doctor, his personal physician. Remember that physician is a synonym for doctor. Personal physician. But much more than that, much more than that, because of his talents, because of his mastery of language, Hasdai became the port master of the port of Cordoba. Remember that Cordoba, the Guadalquivir up to Cordoba at this time was still navigable. You would still have quite a lot of traffic, of cargo going up and down the Guadalquivir from the port of Cordoba. He was port master. He was also the head of customs, the aduana, and so inspected everything that left and entered. And very soon, he became the head of all diplomacy. Anybody, anybody visiting, any missions going out, coming in, he was in charge. And he used this power, because it was genuine power, he used this power to benefit the cultural life of the Jews in Al-Andalus. So, letters sent to people in yeshiva. A yeshiva is it's like a seminary, right? In Christianity, it's a seminary. In Islam, it's a madrasa. Well, in Judaism, it's a yeshiva. And the most famous at that time were in Babylon. The concentration of learning in Babylon, that Talmud, the writings, the commentaries on the Bible, the Talmud at that time. Yes, the people there knew more about Judaism than anyone else. And so all over the world, Jews everywhere were writing to these wise men, the Gaonim, to ask questions and receive answers. And of course, many of these letters still survive. So these yeshiva, especially the one at Sura, these yeshiva were very, very important places. And of course, Hastayim Shabrud, writing letters and trying to find answers. And at one point there was pirates captured one of these wise men. And Shaprut paid a large amount of money as rescate, as ransom, and had this man go to Cordoba. All of a sudden, Cordoba became a place of learning, an alternative to the yeshivot in Babylon. Cordoba had its, all of a sudden, it had its own prestige. It had its own learning. All of this under the sponsorship of Hastai ibn Shaprut. And it's a good thing because the places in Babylon, that whole community is going to be wiped out at one point, but what was done in Cordoba was not. In any case, we know a lot about this because many of these letters were saved just in case. You know, you have lots of letters, you have an accumulation of letters, you want to throw them away, but who knows? There might be, there might be quotes, right? Thetas, biblicas. There might be quotes from the Bible. There might be other sacred words. You don't really want to burn this. You don't want to throw it away. So, for example, in Cairo, in the synagogue in Cairo, what they did was they just put it in a room and forgot about it and kind of walled it up so that it was emparedado. It was behind a wall, and all of these many, many letters, all of them discovered at the beginning of the 20th century, rediscovered, come to light, and there we find all kinds of commentaries and all kinds of business transactions. A businessman from a businessman from Al-Andalus contacts another businessman from Malabar in India, and they make an agreement. All of that thanks to the Pax Arabica, thanks to the ease, the facilities of international commerce at this time. And yes, many of these letters are preserved. Now, Shaprud heard about the Khazars. The Khazars, at first he didn't believe it, but somebody told him there was a Jewish tribe living in the Caspian Sea, in the Caucasus Mountains, and around there, there was a Jewish tribe about 15 days distant from the Byzantine Empire, and he immediately thought that this could be one of the lost tribes, one of the 10 tribes of Israel, one of the tribes that the Assyrians, when they attacked the northern kingdom, Israel, not Judah, they attacked the northern kingdom and took 10 of the tribes away. Whereas the southern kingdom made a deal and was allowed to live, allowed to stay. So yes, the 10 lost tribes of Israel, and could they be one of them? And so Hastai sent a letter. Of course, the letter took a long time to get there. The first envoy, the first person he sent, he sent the man to Constantinople, and he wasn't given permission to continue, you know, just in case. It sounded like a bad idea. Al-Andalus making a deal with a potential enemy in the north. In any case, finally he sent the letter with another person, indirectly, a German Jew going through what is today Hungary and most of Russia, East Europe, and then finally reaching the Khazar kingdom and their King Joseph. And the letter is absolutely incredible. It says, "I, Hastai, son of Isaac, son of Ezra, belong to the exiled Jews of Jerusalem in Sepharad." And then he talks about how magnificent Abderrahman is and how wonderful it is to serve Abderrahman. And he talks about, yes, I am, when people bring gifts to my Lord, with costly presents, trying to get his favor, people like the king of the Franks, the king of the Germans, the king of Constantinople, all of them passed through my hands, and I am responsible for making gifts in return. And to tell what kind of person he was, and to present his credentials, let's put it that way. And he said that he wants to know if these could possibly be one of the lost tribes of the kingdom of Israel that the Assyrians took away in what, the 8th century BC. And the, of course, he said that it is wonderful to know that there is a country out there, because at that time in Europe, they were saying that God was punishing the Jews by not giving them a country. And so if they have a country out there in Asia somewhere, then this disproves the accusation, the insult that is currently being used against them. And King Joseph got the letter, and he answered back, saying, you know, how wonderful it is to hear from you, and how through your letter you can tell how intelligent you are, and what your education is. We live in an area formerly occupied by Bulgarians. The Bulgarians were as numerous as the sand in the sea. This is a reference. This is a biblical reference too. This is what they talk about in the book of Joshua, right? When Joshua comes in and to attack the Canaanites, right? In the Bible, it's described as numerous as the sand on the shores of the sea. Well, so yes, a legitimate biblical reference. In any case, talking about giving a parallel about how the Khazars came in to where the Bulgarians had been, and now they were in the promised land at the headwaters, the delta of the Volga River. And what a privileged position that is to be. I mean, here they are right on the Silk Road, right? La Ruta de la Seda, the Silk Road, begins there at the delta of the Volga River. Also, down the Volga River, you got Vikings coming and going. Varangians. You have Varangians coming and going. You have all kinds of commerce, all kinds of traffic, all kinds of people. And he says that about 100 years earlier, there had been a king. And that this king was impressed by the different religions around there, the king Bulan, and he invited representatives, a Christian from Constantinople, a Muslim from the Abbasi kingdom, from Baghdad, and a Jew, to argue their case. And the three of them argued their case very well. The king, King Bulan, was going to choose between Christianity, Islam, or Judaism. And he didn't know which one to choose. He had to think about it. He had to debate about it. And finally, he made up his mind. All right, I have to take a short break now. I'll be back just afterwards.
Y aquí en su currículo dice que es usted Susana de la Tormenta de la Casa Targaryen, primera de su nombre que no arde, reina de Merín, reina de los Ándalos y los primeros hombres, Khaleesi del Gran Mar de Hierba, rompedora de cadenas...
Sí, y madre de dragones, con nivel alto de inglés. Ya no hace falta que exageres tu nivel de inglés. Con el método Vaughan es posible mejorar de verdad porque nuestros profesores te retan y acompañan para que obtengas los resultados que buscas. Apúntate ahora a nuestros cursos trimestrales y vive una nueva experiencia de aprendizaje con los profesores Vaughan. Apúntate ahora. Llama al 91-133-5833.
¿Tres meses y luego? ¡Pum! ¡Ya está! ¡Qué fácil!
Apúntate a nuestros cursos trimestrales. En solo tres meses perfeccionarás tu inglés. Cursos trimestrales de Vaughan. GrupoVaughan.com.
Mira, mejor hazte un trimestral.
¿Un qué?
Un curso trimestral de Vaughan.
Clases 100% método Vaughan. Para todos los niveles. No te quedes sin tu plaza. Déjate de líos y mejor, hazte un trimestral. Más información en GrupoVaughan.com.
Bienvenido al curso para aprender inglés mientras duermes. Durante los próximos días voy a acompañarle en sus sueños con hipnosis pedagógica y usted hablará inglés en 5 días. Garantizado. Ahora busque un lugar cómodo, túmbese con los pies en alto, cierre los ojos y relájese. Relax, relax.
Que no te cuenten cuentos. No existen los milagros para aprender inglés mientras duermes, por mucho que te guste la idea. Pero con nuestros cursos trimestrales puedes mejorarlo en solo 3 meses. Los cursos trimestrales de Vaughan son ideales para gente que necesita resultados a medio plazo y a un precio asequible. GrupoVaughan.com.
Ya no hace falta que exageres tu nivel de inglés. Con el método Vaughan es posible mejorar de verdad porque nuestros profesores te retan y acompañan para que obtengas los resultados que buscas. Apúntate ahora a nuestros cursos trimestrales y vive una nueva experiencia de aprendizaje con los profesores Vaughan. Apúntate ahora. Llama al 91-133-5833.
Oye, pregúntale al mago del sombrero y la barba blanca, ¿qué es eso?
¿Mago blanco, mago blanco? ¿Qué es eso que se acerca?
Es algo muy grande, algo muy antiguo que estaba olvidado, pero que siempre vuelve. Un monstruo terrible.
¿Qué es?
es el sentimiento de culpa. Es esa sensación de que ha pasado otro año y tu nivel de inglés sigue igual. Es el típico "me tengo que poner". ¡Está llegando! ¡Corred, insensatos!
Apúntate ahora a nuestros cursos trimestrales y empieza ya a mejorar tu inglés con el método Vaughan. Unas clases que te retan y te sorprenden para que saques lo mejor que llevas dentro y mejores de verdad tu inglés. Vive en persona la pasión de los profesores Vaughan. Apúntate ahora. Llama a 911335833.
Este verano tus hijos van a vivir un montón de aventuras en inglés. Y sin salir de Madrid, en los Urban Camps tenemos un montón de aventuras y temáticas disponibles y todo sin que los peques tengan que dormir fuera de casa. Tu reserva ya en campamentosvaughan.com. Urban Camps, aventuras en inglés. No las dejes escapar. Disfruta de los Urban Camps en Las Rozas, Colegio Europeo de Madrid, en Aluche, Colegio Santa Gema Galgani, Las Tablas, Colegio Estudiantes, en Metropolitano, Ciudad Universitaria, CMU Isabel de España, y en Arganda, Colegio Sai Virgen de la Soledad. Infórmate de los campamentos de Vaughan en campamentosvaughan.com. Los cursos trimestrales de Vaughan son ideales para gente que necesita resultados a medio plazo y a un precio asequible. Descúbrelos en grupovaughan.com. Los cursos trimestrales te ofrecen este programa.
Welcome back. This is Western Civilization from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. And on this program, I've been talking about Hasdai ibn Shaprut, who was the personal doctor, the foreign minister, and, well, pretty much everything in the palace at Cordoba during the time of the caliphate. He was Abdurrahman III's right-hand man. And one of the things he did was this famous, absolutely famous correspondence with the king of Khazar. And this kingdom, located at the mouth of the Volga River on the Caspian Sea, this kingdom which had been unknown until that time, this was a wonderful thing for Hasdai, and it was a wonderful thing to receive a reply from their king, who is telling him how 100 years earlier, King Bulan didn't know which religion to choose. And so he asked for an expert from each of the three major religions, from Judaism, from Christianity, and from Islam. And, at least according to the letter that he writes, he said, on the third day, Bulan called all of the sages or sabios, all of the sages together and said to them, speak and argue with each other and make clear to me which is the best religion. They began to dispute with one another without arriving at any results until the king said to the Christian priest, what do you think of the religion of the Jews and of the Muslims? Which is to be preferred? Which is preferable? The priest answered, between the Jews and the Muslims, the religion of the Israelites, the religion of the Jews, is better than that of the Muslims. Then the king asked the Qadi, the Islamic sage, said, and what do you say? Is the religion of the Israelites or of the Christians preferable? And the Islamic expert said, no, of the two, the Jewish religion is preferable. And so the king said, okay, you admit with your own mouths that the religion of the Israelites is better. Therefore, I will convert to that religion, the religion of Abraham, and with me all my people. And at least this is the story given in the letter from the king. And this would have happened about something like 100 years earlier. And by this time, yes, everybody is fully conversant, writing in the Hebrew language and fully conversant with the Bible and all of the Jewish practices. So, yes, a mass conversion to Judaism, something unique in the world. Now, unfortunately for the Khazars, by the time that this letter arrived, the Khazar kingdom was not going to last much longer. If you remember, on an earlier program, I was talking about the original foundation of Russia, the creation of Kiev today in the Ukraine, but in its origin, the first city in Russia, founded as a trading post by Varangians, by Vikings. And it soon became a prosperous and powerful kingdom, and it expanded. And so, yes, by the end of the 10th century, the Khazaris could not resist anymore. There was a series of battles, and the Khazaris pretty much disappear. They disappear from history. Now, the fact is that one of the great mysteries is how you got hundreds of thousands of Jewish people living in Eastern Europe just a couple of centuries after this. So by the 15th century, many. By the 17th century, many more. At the beginning of the 20th century, in the area around Eastern Poland, what would be Belarusia today, the area called Galicia, you had something like 2 million. And all around, you had so many Jewish people living in Eastern Europe. And how did they get there? When did they get there? Where did they come from? Well, the easiest answer would be that these are descendants of the Khazaris. That it was the Khazari people who were displaced by the creation of what would be Russia, and that they moved north and a couple of centuries later, we have them living in East Europe. And that is so convenient, and it explains so much. It's a wonderful theory, and it was really popular about 50 years ago. Well, unfortunately, subsequently, all kinds of investigation have been done, and it isn't true genetically, linguistically, ethnically. No, it isn't true. Sometimes a theory is so convenient and so beautiful, and it explains so much that even if the evidence says no, it's painful. It's painful to lose a theory like that. Oh, well. In any case, yes, the Khazaris, they disappear. Well, there are references to them. Later on, there is a scholar in Toledo who is going to write about the Jewish life in Toledo, and he says that there are Khazaris living in Spain, and that they are studying in the local yeshivas, in the local schools, religious schools. But yeah, that was the famous letter to the Khazars, Khazaries, I think that's in Spanish. In any case, the letter to the Khazars by Hastai ibn Shaprut. But he was also responsible for, well, all kinds of diplomatic successes. For example, when it was time to send Recemundo, when it was time to send the Bishop of Elvira to Byzantium to talk to Romanus II, Romanus II, Porphyrigenitus, for some reason, he was considered a kind of a usurper. He was considered not really royal blood. And so they wanted to tell people that he had been born and raised in the palace. And the palace had this magnificent marble, purple-colored marble, right, called Porphyry. And there was a room with Porphyry in it. And so they called him Porphyrigenitus, meaning that he was born and raised in the palace. This just gave him extra legitimacy. In any case, Romanus II Porphyrigenitus, Constantine VII, Porphyrigenitus, his uncle, when he was young, bullied him. His uncle raised him. His parents had been killed. His uncle raised him and always told the boy that he was going to castrate him. And finally the uncle died. The uncle died in the hippodrome in Constantinople, performing a pagan ritual. That's all the chronicle says, that he was performing a pagan ritual in the hippodrome when he died. And fortunately for poor Constantine, he was able to survive. In any case, Constantine was the leader that they needed to convince to move against the pirates, or the North Africans, the Fatimids from North Africa, who were who had taken over Sicily and who were moving into the southern part of Italy, so that Al-Andalus saw that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and thought that the Byzantines were still powerful enough to assert themselves, to express their hegemony over the eastern part of the Mediterranean, and that they could work together to at least limit the damage of these Fatimids. But it didn't work out that way. The Byzantines at this time were weak. They were much more interested in living well, in splendor, than in actual fighting. It was going to be the son of Constantine, Basil the Bulgar Slayer, Basilius Bulgaroctonus, El Mata Bulgaros, Basilio El Mata Bulgaros. That's right, Basil the Bulgar Slayer, who is going to be very famous as a warrior emperor, and is going to bring back this kind of military splendor to the Byzantine Empire. But there was no deal there. But he did come back with handicraftsmen, artisanos, to build the mihrab in the mosque, with tesele, with gold, and a beautiful glass pieces, like a mosaic. But some of the most splendid work ever done, that could only be done in Constantinople by these people, well, he sent those people to Cordoba to work on the mosque. If you go to Cordoba today, that mosque, that area of the mosque, the area that traditionally faces Mecca, the area to which prayers are directed. Of course, in the mosque of Cordoba, it doesn't face Mecca. The mosque in Cordoba is unique. The mihrab does not face Mecca. If you see that in Cordoba, remember that that is Byzantine, and that represents some of the most splendid artistic activity that Byzantium was capable of producing. Now, he sent that. He also sent a copy of the botanical book, the most important botanical book of that time, by Dioscorides. And this was a wonder. This was a marvel. And Hasdai Ibn Shaprut was one of the people responsible for translating that. At first, there was no one who could translate it from Greek into Arabic, because nobody knew Greek. Nobody in Cordoba knew Greek. I know this is hard to believe, but and so they had to find somebody. Finally, they found a monk. They found someone from Sicily. Right? Sicily, again, had been taken over by the Fatimiyas, had been taken over by Arabs, well, Berbers, but Arab-speaking. And Sicily had ancient communities from Magna Graecia, islands where, enclaves where people still, thousands of years later, still spoke Greek. And yeah, one of the most magnificent things to be able to find a Greek speaker who knew Arabic and bring him to Cordoba and have him translate this book, which of course was the wonder of the world, the wonder of the Western world, because the information in this book was suddenly available. And from Arabic translated to Latin and, well, all over Europe. Unfortunately, what they didn't know, what they should have known, mysteriously, they didn't know that a translation of that book in Arabic already existed in Babylon, in Baghdad. That in the libraries in Baghdad, there was already a translation of that book. But evidently, nobody knew that. They thought this was the first. And it was considered a wonderful thing, a marvelous thing. So yes, he was responsible for these diplomatic missions. For example, Otto the First, the Roman Emperor, named Roman Emperor, the whole empire had been sort of forgotten and was revitalized, restored under Otto the First. And a monk, John of Gortz, a Benedictine, came with some kind of diplomatic mission. It was necessary to talk to the Roman Emperor, and to the head of the Holy Roman Empire, Otto the First, and Rethimundo was chosen for that mission as well. Now, one of the diplomatic, one of the best diplomatic turns that could have happened for Abderrahman and Hasdai Ibn Shaprut is entirely responsible for this. He is the one who went personally. He went to the kingdom of Navarra, to Pamplona, and spoke to the queen regent there. Her name was Toda. The queen regent hated Al-Andalus, but after the battle of Valdejunquera, she had been totally defeated. She was now a vassal, and there was nothing she could do about it. She was extremely unhappy about this, but in any case, she was the tía abuela. She was the great aunt of Abderrahman, right? Abderrahman's grandmother's sister, paternal grandmother's sister, but didn't like that situation. In any case, Queen Toda had a problem. Her son, Sancho I, had been expelled from the throne of León. He was kicked off the throne. He was in trouble. He was obese. He couldn't get on a horse. He was so big. They say that at this point, he weighed about 240 kilos. If you can imagine, at a time when people were much thinner, much, much thinner than they are today. 240 kilos. Nobody had ever seen anything even remotely like it. And so he was the hazme reír. He was the laughing stock. And, expelled from the throne by his brother. They both agreed to go down and rendir pleticia, right, to pay homage to Abderrahman. And Hasdai ibn Shabrut, the doctor, agreed to be responsible for the cure. So Sancho el Craso, that's what they called him, the fat, Sancho the fat, Sancho el Craso went down, if he couldn't ride a horse, I don't know how he did it, but he went down to Cordoba and with the help of Hasdai, he lost all that weight. They say, I have read, let's put it this way, I have read that a part of the cure involved sewing his mouth. So for 40 days, he could only drink liquids. For 40 days, he didn't eat anything solid. That was part of the cure. In any case, with the help of armies from Al-Andalus, Sancho got back on the throne, got back on his horse, got back on the throne, and so León, at this point, was in debt to Córdoba. There was no question of continuing with the Reconquista or doing anything like that. No, the king of León owed his throne, debió, right, el trono. He owed his throne to Abderrahman. So, and you can imagine, by the way, his uncle, Sancho's uncle at this point, felt very bad about what was going on, felt very alienated. His uncle, Fernán González, was in charge of Castile, which at this time was sort of a frontier. It was just just starting out. And this caused a kind of a division between Castile and León, not the first. Castile later to become independent of the kingdom of León. Now, all of these things, again, all of these things done by Hasdai and all of these things done in part because Abdurrahman understood the value of promoting people according to merit. He was fortunately able to surround himself by the best. And yeah, one of these, talking about Refemundo, the Bishop of Elbira, in addition to going to Constantinople, I didn't mention this at the time, but Constantinople at this time, it was famous all over the world because it had a public clock. It had a clock in the forum. And this was the first time you had a real public clock that everybody could consult. It was considered one of the wonders of the world at this time. From Constantinople, Resamundo was able to go to Jerusalem and see the sites there, come back. He was one of the, one of the most learned, one of the most traveled men of his time, one of the wisest, más sabio. And it's very unfortunate that if he wrote anything, we don't have it. The same, Hasdei, if he wrote, poetry. He adapted Arabic styles to the Hebrew language, which had never had anything remotely similar before. But, all right, I seem to have run out of time. Thank you for listening, and please listen to my next program.
El sobre está en o encima del escritorio.
The envelope is on the desk.
El sobre está debajo del escritorio.
The envelope is under the desk.
El sobre está al lado del escritorio.
The envelope is next to the desk.
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio.
Hay maneras de empezar el día. Hay mejores formas de empezar el día, y es que en las mañanas con Vaughan empiezan con un saludo.
Hello, good morning.
A las 7:30, haz las mañanas más productivas, más radio, más Vaughan, mucho más Richard Vaughan Live.
¿Y a ti? ¿Se te hace cuesta arriba el inglés? Clases 100% método Vaughan para todos los niveles que te darán el empujón que necesitas para vencer todas tus dificultades con el idioma. Más información en el 91-133-5833 o en grupovaughan.com.
Momento. Ups.
Irene, sin pestanear, ¿cómo se dice? Voy a casarme con él.
I'm going to marry... to him?
Almost, but not quite.